The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. One fall!
It's almost time for a new chapter of Geek Catch-Up to start. But before it does, Chris and I wanted to take a moment to send our love and appreciation out to all of you for choosing to hang out with us. If you enjoy Geek Catch-Up, then make sure to slam that subscribe button and help us level up the show by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also find us on social media to get updates on all things GK, interact directly with us, and content from the world of geekery. Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter, links to all of which can be found in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com.
If you'd like to support the shoe, there's even links to our Square shop where you can find official GK merchandise like shirts and stickers. And Patreon, if extra content is your thing. Above all, though, the absolute best thing you can do is spread the love for the world of geekery by sharing the Geek Catch-Up podcast with your friends and family.
Now get ready to enjoy today's show, and as always, remember to stay saucy.
If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Catch-Up Podcast.
What's good, Geek Catch-Up family? I'm Kyle Eckert.
And I'm Chris Heck.
And you are listening to Season 3, Chapter 41. Today, we're revisiting a video game that we first covered in Season 2, but has recently dropped arguably its biggest DLC to date. That game is none other than Marvel's Avengers and the War for Wakanda DLC. Crystal Dynamics released Marvel's Avengers in quarter 3 of 2020, and the game debuted with high expectations, as all things Marvel tend to do, and unfortunately, the game didn't quite live up to what fans wanted. With a short story and limited number of endgame missions, it simply seemed to be lacking in all the right areas, averaging a 6 out of 10 rating. Yet despite getting slammed from just about everyone, Chris and I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. The action-oriented gameplay was fun, with solid co-op, and the unique feel for each core cast of playable Avengers shine through. Could our positive experience have been because we slow-played beating it? Maybe. Or could have just been we're huge geeks on all things Marvel and Avengers? Also, maybe. Either way, we've stuck with it, and we're here to chat about the latest DLC, the War for Wakanda story missions, and the Black Panther playable character. We'll break down this set of new levels, enemies, and of course King T'Challa himself, but before we get there, we should get you up to speed on what has released since Chapter 19, when we first discussed Marvel's Avengers. So Chris, since that time, we've seen three major updates, two of which included new playable characters.
Yeah, really, to catch folks up on what's been going on with the game since then, like you said, they've had three fairly large content updates, but they've also had a variety of updates over the year.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen small things that are really around bug fixes and those types of technical aspects that'll come with games, but even medium, you know, little content drops, little adjustments, and then those larger ones. So, you know, initially it was all about stability and we had those matchmaking fixes that were needed because we did see that early on in PS4 and Xbox One that there was challenges with matchmaking with random players. You know,
yeah.
You and I, we could jump in and play for the most part, no issue if you knew somebody, but getting random matchmaking struggled. So they jumped in, they fixed those types of things. And then I think it was right before the first of this year, or maybe right around the first of this year, they launched the Kate Bishop DLC. That was the first character. We also got new story missions. So you kind of got that additional content, which helped with the end game aspect that was largely the biggest argument for most people. And then fast forward a few more months into 2021, we got that first major update, I would say, which was the Future Imperfect pack that featured Hawkeye as another, you know, playable character, I think, number 8. We got new villains in Maestro. We got a new biome for the first time. So that was really the first place where they gave us stuff to sink our teeth into as players.
For sure. And I know when it launched, like I said, that the big argument on the game was there wasn't enough to do. And getting your character to level 50 wasn't, you know, wasn't that hard to get there.
Right.
And then once you did, why am I still playing this game, as kind of all of these games that are live service of this style? And then they ended up pushing stuff back. I remember that happened very early on, is they heard the fan feedback, and they originally, their timeline was much sooner. And they said, you know what, we're going to spend a little more time getting the stability fixes in place. So that does mean we're going to push our characters back a touch. But I think it's fair to say now, here we are a year later, three extra characters. They've kind of hit a groove as far as extra missions, stability that we played the other night. There's still some matchmaking issues happening.
Right.
But it is a much better game a year later. You know, the action-oriented gameplay was always fun. That was always there. But it's the rest of those things that are now finally coming along.
Yeah, and we said when we first covered the game that that was really what that had us hyped the most, you know, and what we were enjoying the most was just the combat. You know, you are in that driver's seat of these characters, and they feel so authentic that, you know, it's hard not to get excited just because of that aspect, you know, as big comic book fans, big fans of these characters.
Sure.
But to your point, you know, it did start to continue to get better. And the other thing to call out about that Future Imperfect pack was that that was the DLC that also came with that next-gen upgrade for PS5 and Xbox Series X, as well as the, you know, very highly fan-requested ability to replay that reassemble mission that was at the end of the original campaign. And to me, that was a huge help in both ways. You know, that reassemble mission was awesome. So yeah, going back and being able to play that again is a big help.
Yeah.
But the change over to the next gen hardware and getting that update was all the difference at that time. And I think it really kind of re-energized my interest in the game, because load times got so much faster, matchmaking did seem to get a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with everything that was going on screen with the four characters and all the enemies, you know, it really seemed to give it that facelift where it could really handle all of the lightning and laser blast and sword streaks and arrows. You know, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And it crisped it up. It made it more vibrant, you know, less laggy. And so that was a huge help there.
Well, you kind of nailed it. You just said vibrant, because one of the things that comes to mind with that PS5 upgrade was the buffs and the different things that cause your player to have like an aura around them, whether it's green or red or purple. Like, those colors just started popping so much more, and it really elevated just the visual of it all. And, you know, that's going to improve your experience when you're playing the game. The other side of that, and we talk about this all the time, is the DualSense.
Yes.
The PS5 upgrade and using the DualSense with this game took it to a whole new level, because the characters already felt unique in their own right as far as combat and mechanics.
Agreed.
But now they definitely feel unique because the controller feels completely different for each character as far as the resistance and the shakes and just everything that the DualSense brings us.
Yeah, that was definitely an easier to overlook item, but I thought they did a pretty good job as well, even though it wasn't like programmed specifically. Like, it wasn't on the level of like an Astro's,
yeah,
or Ratchet and Clank, where they was, you know, developed with the controller in mind. But like you said, the pressure sensitivities, I always think about when you're walking around,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, you think about like how heavy Thor's footprints hit and stuff like that, and you get those different vibrations just from those movements. It does bring it to life a little bit more.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the trigger pressure. Like, that's always first and foremost in my head, is when I'm either shooting an arrow with Hawkeye or throwing Cap's shield. It's the resistance that's there and then not there and then comes back. Like, in keeping in mind when you're throwing the shield or throwing Mjolnir, like, it's, you feel this little bit of resistance, so you got to give it a,
yeah, it feels
and
heavier.
Just kind of give it that final umph, and it's heavy. And then when it flies away, you know, it's gone, free clicking. And then when it comes back, like, the controller starts to feel heavy again. And hey, it's immersive. And that's what it's all about. You know, when you're playing a game like this, you really want to forget that you're you and pretend that you're Hawkeye or pretend that you're Thor, Hulk, whatever, tearing up some, you know, robots or Roy or aimbots or anything from the world of Marvel. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's true. So we got that Future Imperfect pack, and really the last thing I'll say there before we kind of touch on some of the other content packs we've gotten over the last few months leading into War for Wakanda was that, you know, the story there, I thought they did a good job because they did give us this kind of overarching story between two content packs there. We got Kate Bishop first, and, you know, her story was she had been looking for Hawkeye because, you know, he was behind enemy lines, essentially. And that carried into the Future Imperfect, where we got to go and rescue Hawkeye and have him join the team.
Yeah.
The only downfall there was just how similar Kate Bishop and Hawkeye are.
Yeah.
And so it was almost like I liked Kate Bishop a lot at first, especially because she was pretty different from the rest of the cast of characters that we had.
Oh, yeah.
But then once you get Hawkeye, there are some slight differences, but they're dang near the same character. And Hawkeye's just a little bit cooler, in my opinion. He's got that sword. And so, I don't know. It's like once he came out, Kate Bishop went to the back burner to me.
I wish I could disagree with you, but I can't because that happened with me too. When Kate Bishop came out, it was my biggest fear with the very first two characters both being Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just felt strange. Like, why would you give us Kate Bishop and then the very next one be Clint Barton? It doesn't, they're both range characters, and Kate being that first range character that they gave us, you're right, felt totally unique. And then Clint came along and you're like, well, why wouldn't I be the original Hawkeye?
Right.
Kate does. She also has the sword. She has the teleporting, which I thought, you know, like I said, I wish I could disagree with you, but in the end, I ended up doing the same thing. Is because when I first played Kate and I could teleport, I thought it was like the bee's knees. I thought it was so cool the way you could, you know, dart around the screen or create a mirror image of yourself with one of her skills. And I'm like, man, you know, Hawkeye, Clint Barton's going to come out. And I'll probably play him, but I bet I could come back to Kate. You know, I'll play him for a while, but I'll come back to Kate. I'll come back to Kate. And here we are, you know, a couple months down the line. And when I go to pick it up, I do find myself being Clint Barton over Kate Bishop. And it just breaks my heart because I want to like Kate more.
Yeah, and she wasn't a poorly designed character. There was tons to like there. And I feel like eventually, you know, especially if I continue to play enough where I'm like, okay, now I need to go and fully level up every character, you know, I'll circle back.
Yeah.
But, you know, especially since my Hawkeye isn't maxed out yet, you know, he's definitely getting the priority if I'm going to play a character like that.
Right.
But it was still good to see him come in. It expanded the roster. You know, they were heading in the right direction. I thought Future Imperfect was truly that next step. And then between March of this year and, you know, last week with the War for Wakanda, we actually saw pretty much monthly content drops or DLC packs of some size in April, May, June, and July. And so we saw the Tachyon Anomaly, the Red Room Takeover, the Cosmic Cube, and the Wasteland Takeover DLCs that all brought a variety of new endgame missions, character skins, quality of life improvements. They also added in the new patrol mode, which is kind of its own whole new thing you can do.
Yeah.
And so while it all felt like kind of baby steps, and it's still, and we'll probably get into it in a little bit, I think still feels like some baby steps compared to where I would love this game to be. They are continuing in the right direction.
Yeah, it's moving along. My comment on that one would be what they did when the game released and they saw the fans' reactions. The follow-up was they, in turn, gave the fans exactly what they asked for.
Yeah.
And which is really cool. That's what you want to see out of the developer and things like that. Like, listen to the fan base. What are they asking for? What do they want? And then you adjust, pivot, you know, if that's in line with your core goal. The problem I have with that is, how did you not see that coming?
Right.
How did you not know that's what they were going to ask for? Because in a game like this, like, of course, that's what we want. We want more missions. We want some variety in the villain missions. You think of the ones with Abomination and Taskmaster that we had to play over and over and over. Like, how did you not kind of think about that beforehand, that having only two villains for that style of mission wasn't going to be a problem?
Right. I think that that's a challenge that a number of developers have when they go into building games like this, because you see it more often than I feel like we should. And it's real easy to sit on the soapbox over here and just be like, oh, you know, they should have developed 100 more hours of content.
Yeah.
But if you're going to tackle a live service game that is supposed to be in that realm of MMORPG kind of deal, you know, supposed to be something that you want players to constantly be coming back to, I'm thinking Destiny and World of Warcraft and even Diablo, games like that.
Sure.
You've got to really put the time in on the back end. And I think they launched this game. COVID probably had some stuff to do with it, you know, as far as maybe not getting it quite to where they wanted. But, you know, they launched this game and it had this great campaign, great core mechanics. And then as soon as you got to the end, you kind of fell off a cliff a bit. And we've seen that that has continued to be a struggle as far as their player retention, their daily active user counts and things like that. So,
oh, yeah,
it's just an interesting thing, because for us, like a lot of times, or at least I should say for me, you know, if games make some of these mortal sins, I will move on.
Yeah.
And for us, we have still had this cadence of, you know, even if we're not playing a daily or even weekly, once a month, maybe once every 60 days at worst, you and I will still have a session or two and enjoy it and just kick some asses, Thor and Captain or whichever we're feeling that night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like I think that is why we've had such a positive experience. You know, I touched on that we took this slow approach. And I remember when we first bought this game, that's kind of what we said we were going to do. I don't think either one of us had planned to buy this on day one. We said we were going to wait 6 months. And so we had that, let's slow play it. Let's play it little by little so we don't get burnt out. But you can't expect everybody to take that approach. Like, you know, people are going to want to blitz it
right
out the gate. They're going to beat the 25-hour story mode that you're going to give them. And then they want that extra stuff. They're going to level all their characters up, and they want some variety in that process.
Well, and they struggled with a few things. So, like, there wasn't a whole lot of gear sets out there,
yeah,
you know, and gear honestly never feels as impactful as you would hope. You definitely can power up and you can unlock, you know, different stat boosts and things like that. But I've never had a gear set, even like the gold character specific stuff that I've been so married to, like you find in other games. And so when you have longer mission forms like they do, which is great in a lot of cases, you know, some decently built out missions that are going to take you 30, 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not going to get that full tilt reward, you know, it just makes it hard to have that draw. And so I think that coupled with, like you were saying, you know, they didn't have a lot of mission types at the time and you were replaying a lot of the same stuff, it just quickly got monotonous. And they've spent a lot of time, I think, doing what they can to fix that, even though not every area has quite gotten there. So
it's fair.
I don't want to break it down too much, but yeah, I think that gives a sense of just realistically where this game is and has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if you want to jump here into the War for Wakanda stuff, but I think that it'll, you know, continue to show that trend we've been talking about.
Yeah, I agree. I think when we get out of the War of Wakanda stuff, we can kind of look at where they're going to go after the DLC, because I do think they've made some strides. They've shown some growth. They dropped this, which was more growth, but there's still room for improvement. So we can get into maybe what we think is going to come after this, you know, Wakandan-based levels, missions, characters, after we break it down.
So what were your thoughts so far on Wakanda? It came out just a few days ago, last week, you know, August, what was it, 17th?
17th, yeah, it came out on Tuesday.
Yeah, so we've had, you know, 5-6 days of time of recording to play it, check out the stories, check out the additional content. So what have been your initial thoughts here?
It's been on par with everything we've gotten so far. I've really enjoyed the new levels, and Black Panther was very interesting. I'm going to focus in on the story, because the story, you know, it's the classic Ulysses Claw, which is a bit of a yawn for me because I'm so burnt out on Ulysses Claw and Black Panther. You know, yeah. I feel like everywhere we look, that's the only villain from his, you know, rogues gallery that we ever see.
Yeah.
And I know that not everyone has a Batman's level of rogues gallery to draw from, but that was a bit of a bummer to see it yet again it was going to be Claw.
Right.
Like, and I think, you know, to tangent for a brief second, I think that's why the Black Panther movie was so intriguing to so many people, is while Claw was in it, it was more about Killmonger.
Right, yeah.
And it was somebody different that wasn't just instantly recognizable as the guy with the vibranium Barrett-style arm. And so, a little knocks there that they didn't take any risks, they didn't try anything new. But, you know, they set up that origins, Claw's coming in, wants to steal vibranium because T'Challa's father, you know, disrespected Claw's father, the age-old thing.
Daddy issues.
Daddy issues, of course. But everything else was really cool. I thought the Wakandan outpost was designed really well, as far as the, I would say, the throne room. And, you know, like, the city itself was really cool. And then the levels were really awesome. That's where it shined the most for me in this DLC was, yeah, the story was, meh, it's another Claw. But the level design in the jungles and the outpost design and seeing all the little nooks and crannies of Wakanda. And then another big piece was the sound. That's where it stood out the most. So I don't know if you felt similar in that when it comes to story and levels and things like that. I know we'll get into Black Panther, the character itself, here in a moment, though.
Yeah, I agree that once I saw that it was Claw and where they went with the story, it was fairly vanilla. Like, I thought there was more creativity to the Future Imperfect storyline and, you know, Hawkeye and, you know, the Sorceress and everything like that just seemed a little bit more creative, a little bit more unique for the game versus, you know, maybe just something pulled straight out of a comic issue.
Yeah.
I thought that where they really shined was how they highlighted Wakanda. And you got the good scenes with T'Challa and Shuri and the Dora Milaje, you know. And so, like, all of those elements there that everybody loves so much were serviced really well. And I think that the just the increased capabilities of the current gen, you know, the PS5, and the visuals, like, it really fit for a setting like Wakanda. Like, not just the jungle and everything that was going there with the trees and the level design, but just all the tech of Wakanda and the hologram screens at the tables when you're in the outpost and things. Like, it just looks so on point for what we would expect in Wakanda and them being so technologically advanced.
It's true, and that's totally fair, because I think the other outposts that we had seen so far were, you know, the ant hill and the helicarrier and some basic stuff, and it just looked like plain Jane shield things we've seen before.
Yep.
The Wakandan embassy, or not embassy, it was the palace.
Yeah, the palace,
That's what the Wakandan palace was spectacular. Like, the sides, even as you're walking by, the warriors that are on guard, when you kind of briefly walk past them as Black Panther, they stand to attention.
Yeah.
You know, and little things like that.
Or they'll tap their spear on the ground, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for. They nailed Wakanda and that culture and everything that's been built in the comic lore. And so I gave it a little bit of a pass when it came to Claw, even though I do agree. I just would have preferred more liberties taken there or introduced a different, more unique type of villain.
Yeah. Well, they had done that so far. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pound this into the ground, but, like, you think of the core story and they introduced Kamala Khan and MODOK. They put a pretty sweet spin on MODOK. And then the Future Imperfect was, you know, Maestro. Not everyone is familiar with Maestro.
That's true.
And then all of a sudden they get to Black Panther, who, like I said, is their biggest DLC, the character that people are probably hyped about the most. And the story behind it all is just so simple, so simple. But maybe all the focus did go into Wakanda itself, because, like I said, the other big part, I didn't want to beat the story into the ground, so I'm going to move on. But when you're in the palace, if you just pause for a moment and you hear the music playing in the background, like, you talked about that Wakandan culture that they've established both in the comics and definitely in the MCU. We're seeing it all over the place. But, like, just the sounds and the soundtrack, like, it's really well done.
Yeah, and I like how when you're playing as Black Panther, you know, he'll just say things. And so, like, I found myself as I'm running through the jungle and he'll just be like, "Wakanda forever." And I'll just be like, Wakanda forever.
Yeah, that callback is ingrained in us. Like, well done, well done. It's true, it's true. But yeah, looking at the rest with the tech beads, the Kamoya beads all over the place, and Shiri's design, yeah, well done all around. But let's get into Black Panther himself, though. Like, the actual character, because the settings were cool. We'll definitely, I think, talking about Black Panther as the character, we'll touch on some of the mission levels that you go through as him.
Yeah.
But let's talk about him as a character. You know, he was built to be this agile, you know, panther. And he was a lot different than I think what I expected.
Oh, really?
He was a little more tanky than I expected. You know, thinking of Black Panther, and he's going to be quick. He's going to be all over the place and darting with the claws and maybe throwing the daggers. And he ended up being a little more beefy than I envisioned in my head.
That's fair. I mean, he does feel fairly powerful. I wouldn't say quite like Thor level power in the game, but yeah, he does feel pretty strong. I think that maybe where a lot of that comes from is that they gave him that ability to use the vibranium or like the kinetic shielding. So like you can actually eat hits in this game as him and not take any damage. And so that was a little bit more unique for him. So I might agree. I guess the way I started playing though, once I figured out, because he has his ranged attack or those daggers. And those daggers inflict status effects on the people you attack. And so once I had figured that out, I did kind of back off a little bit from just in and, you know, beating the hell out of guys to, as I'm coming in, throwing daggers, then maybe I'm attacking a guy, then I'm bouncing out, throwing daggers. And so it kind of felt more maybe true to what you're getting at for me, because I was doing a little bit more of that in and out with him.
Yeah, and maybe that'll come in time as I level him up a little more and do that ranged approach, dagger, 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 get the buff, come in, slice, slice, and then he also has like a tackle maneuver.
Yeah.
Where he pins certain enemies on the ground and you can just slice them up as you do a full-on MMA mount and slice them up, and then you have a pretty cool like kick out from that as well. So maybe in time when I level him up and he's not so squishy, because you're right, he can take a lot of hits, but I think maybe I've built my character the wrong way, because my guy is still a little too squishy for me.
Well, see, that was, yeah, he definitely was a little bit there before you unlock things, but that was why I felt I was going in and out more. Like that whole aspect, the dagger, learning that it had the status effects, but it was also because I was going down a lot early on. So, I mean, it was more like I just knew I couldn't take every one of those hits. And then I guess it's probably to clarify, now that I have leveled him up a little bit more, not all the way to max, but I think he's at like 35.
Okay.
So, you know, I've got upgraded pretty much every aspect of him to some extent, you know. So his R2, where you do get that kinetic bounce back or whatever it is, you know, that block and stuff, is just, it's much more effective now than it was at the beginning.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Maybe I, hearing all this, it's confirmed I just built my character the wrong way. I expected him to be that fast melee, square, triangle type move, and it just didn't work out in that fashion. I've been playing either too much Captain or too much Hawk, most likely, because the second character I really started to level up as we played was the Hawk. His skills were sweet, though. I know when we were playing the other night, you know, you had a pretty awesome moment with his R1, with his intrinsic ability, where he throws a spear.
Yeah, he pulls out that giant spear and just throws it straight through people. It made me think about like Leonidas and the Spartans, you know, where they're just like pinning people. But that's exactly what happened. If you hit enemies in a certain line, you know, if that spear hits a wall or a stone or a building, anything within a certain distance, it will pin them there.
Yeah.
And so that, it was a bigger enemy. It was like a brute, and pretty much right through his heart, pinned him to the wall, and then just went over and just beat the living piss out of him, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah, just sliced him up. Well, I noticed that you can also pin them to the ground.
Yeah.
Like the smaller enemies, you can hit them in the chest and it takes them to the ground and they sit there and they'll flail. That was pretty awesome. The other two abilities he has is the Kamoya beads, which provide like, if anybody's ever played Injustice, the way Batman has the Batarangs that just kind of, like, float around him. It's very similar with Black Panther. You release the Kamoya beads, and they float around you, and you can set them up to either protect or attack you. That was cool.
Well, and that helped with the squishiness a little bit, because I actually put my Kamoya beads to the support side.
Okay.
So when I hit that, it still, I think, does some offensive work for, and stuns people, but, you know, it's giving health out to your allies, and I think maybe a buff as well as you start to unlock more and more of the mastery type skill tree items. So that was another change that I feel like I had made.
All right, so this is 100% confirmed, because I took it in the opposite direction, and I did attack. I just built my Black Panther the wrong way.
You built a tank.
Yeah. Well, no, I built him to be this fast-moving, like, you know, like I said, light attack, light attack, light attack, and then maybe drop a kick or two and then move on. And I set the Kamoya beads to be attack, so while I'm bopping from enemy to enemy, that they're also getting some work in, and I think I just maybe need to go back in and retool him to be something more aligned with what he's supposed to be and not what I want him to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, you kind of get that feel. Like, when you first start playing him, it's like parkouring in a Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's so fast, he hops over everything. And so it just makes you kind of want to go that direction. But I think that there is some flexibility there. I even saw one guy I was playing with last night in a random match. He had his level 50, and then, I mean, literally like 200 champion. I don't know how much this guy had played in 7 days.
Wow.
Like, it was insane, because you have to do all that, you know, character specific. So hats off to that guy. But he had on his Panther like this constant shield that was around him, and you could visibly see it.
Yeah.
And I had not seen that from anybody else. I haven't gotten that myself. So whether it was a skill set or maybe a certain piece of gear that gave that, you know, I don't know. But I thought that was interesting, because he seemed to be just wrecking through everybody, you know.
Yeah, that's wild.
Didn't go down at all, even on the harder enemies.
That sounds like something that you would unlock in the champion, like the post-level 50 level ups, that's something just truly extra, because they also added that. I don't think we touched on that in the first part, is they added post level 50 abilities. So once you get your character there, you can continue to add extra things, and a constant shield. Like, there's no way that seems like a normal skill tree type thing.
Well, maybe it wasn't like constant, like 100% always on. I was thinking that maybe it was like just a different way for his R2, like when you kind of power yourself up with your intrinsic energy. Like, maybe that was what he was getting out of that. I just don't know yet, but it was definitively like, that guy is different than the rest of us. And it was funny, because like all four of us were Black Panthers, because everybody's just playing as Panther right now. So
yeah,
he was standing out even in that mix.
Nice. Well, and then you can change up the look and the feel, where hopefully everyone had a different skin on.
We did, actually. That was kind of the best part, was, you know, with all the skins out there. And I guess that's worth calling out, was I thought that this launch, you know, Hawkeye had some good skins, but it seemed like they came harder and faster with more skins than ever for Panther at launch. And so it did seem like everybody was kind of finding their particular style. Like, I've got one of the ones that is, you know, black and purple. Everybody knows I love purple. It's very Taker colors.
Yeah.
I saw another guy that was using the skin where he's in the suit, but he doesn't have the helmet. And then we had one that was more of the traditional African with the red and yellow and green colors built in. So it was a really diverse group, even though we were all the same character.
Yeah, but that's sweet. And that's a good call out, because you're right. So far from what I've seen in various skins, is there's one skin that is miles ahead of all of the other skins for each character.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking of, you know, either War Hulk or Maestro are 10 times better than any other skin for the Hulk. And Thor, you either get King Thor or MCU, you know, there's a couple ones, but they're way better. Or Ronin Hawkeye, Ronin Clint Barkin is 10 times better than anything else. But with Black Panther, it was quite spread out. Like, you could really see, oh, I'm just going to buy all of these and mix it up from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, that would cost a ton of money. Yeah. But I did have some credits left over, and when I was going through, because I bought that credit pack when the game first launched, and I've been kind of just like slowly like using some credits for one skin for each character pretty much. But it took me a while to figure out exactly which Panther skin I was going to get because of that. I mean, there's probably, what, like 10 or 15 total, and I'd say at least minimum 5 or 6 that I was like, okay, this could just be my permanent Panther skin.
Yeah, I would say that maybe close to 20 when you get into the ones that you'll unlock as you level him up and
true, actually,
beat
yeah.
his challenge card and stuff like that.
I was just thinking about the marketplace, so you're right. Yeah, there's way more than 10 to 20, yeah.
Yeah, because I think at this point, all characters have 20 to 25... 30 might be pushing it. I'm trying to visualize how big that screen is, how many skins that they have. But you mentioned it earlier, and I think it kind of segues into the levels really well. His ability to parkour.
Right.
And one thing I noticed in the Wakandan levels, and they pointed it out when they did their little war table demonstrations, was how vertical they are.
Right, yeah. A lot more climbing up and down. And it was a little bit more accessible. Like in some of the other ones, the previous levels, if there were vertical items, like you kind of regretted not being a character that could fly.
Oh, yeah.
And that didn't seem to be the case here. Like it was less gimmicky as far as how non-flying characters could, you know, get up the mountain or get up the building and things like that.
Yeah, there are definitely a few moments where we were co-oping. And our primaries were Captain America and Thor. And we'd be playing, and Chris would call out a chest, and I would just be like, well, it's so much work to get up that high. You can just go get it, and I'll wait. And yeah. I'm going to skip it. I'm going to skip it because, you know, getting Captain all the way up on the top of a mountain or climbing up so many different towers, jumping from platform to platform was really difficult. I'm like, just fly up there with Thor. Tell me what it is. If it's a gold, I'll find my way up
right,
there.
Yeah.
If it's a common, I'm not doing it.
yeah. It kind of made it a pain in the ass there from that standpoint. Even when they would like try to design the levels in a way to help you up there with like, you know, a jump platform or stuff, like
yeah.
you still struggle. I mean, it was totally night and day between the flying characters and the ones that were stuck on the ground.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did a good job. And I thought that another part of the level design that they did was they kind of tweaked some of the puzzles.
Oh, yeah.
And so we finally got a little bit of fresh, you know, look at some puzzles because they had really been kind of reusing the same mechanics, 2 or 3 mechanics for the different doors and stuff. And so I thought with the pressure plates and timing and, you know, that was a nice change. I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah, they even did that with a few villains where you're not just kind of constantly peppering one area. You've got to run over here. You got to hit something that's going to activate this over there. You got to run over, throw a dagger, then hit it. And then the villains, there's one in particular with the drill that like rotates.
Right.
So you really either have to move with the rotation or you fight a couple enemies, wait for it to come back to you, then throw your daggers or your arrows or whatever you're going to do to hit the mark.
Well, and I think that's something that the game needed because really all of the boss fights and villains in the, you know, previous expansions and game, they were just bullet sponges, you know? Like,
yeah.
You pretty much were just sitting there pounding them as much as you could until the life bar drained and nothing else was happening. And so they did seem to make more of a move into not only having to fight a lot of tough enemies, but actually doing some specific actions to progress the fight. And I always think that in games like this, it really helps. You know, Destiny did very well with that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's a shooter first and foremost, but in their raids and a lot of their bigger missions, you know, you're actually having to seek out and do very specific things if you're going to open that door and move on.
Yeah. As much as it might seem, we did like this game and do like this game. And we keep having these like subtle little things. We're like, that wasn't so great. They could have done that better. Overall, we were still very much like this game. But, you know, we're going to point out a flaw when we see it.
Well, and it shows their progression. I mean, it definitely was an issue. But finally, we're starting to see even some of those smaller mechanics get the attention. So I think even though, yes, we're being very critical of the game and it deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, it's also showing that they are growing and trying to do what they can to make this game you know, better and better.
So, well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one last thing here, just because you had talked about the villains that I think is worth calling out, was that I thought that another aspect of this expansion that I liked was the fact that we finally got some new enemy types.
Yeah.
You know, really up through all of the expansions, it was still just a ton of aimbots, you know, and even though that, you know, we got Maestro and a couple new fights on that level, the bulk of your combat was just aimbots. And so here, even though we still saw some new robots, you know, but we got spider robots of different sizes, which at least mixed it up, had some new attacks. We saw some new versions of brutes with some giant hammers, some chain guns. Then they have this new shielding system and sonic weapons to really disrupt the vibranium suit and things that you are gaining from being a Black Panther. So that was kind of cool and something new to deal with. And then we even saw Crossbones. I want to give a shout out to Crossbones. Yeah. You know, the focus was obviously on Claw, but they brought in Crossbones there.
A different version than the MCU version of Crossbones, but they definitely brought him in. I had that noted to bring up as well that, you know, they finally brought in another mini boss,
right,
that we can fight in those side missions, which should be cool. And you're right, the AIM gurus to the Kree gurus and just AIM bots to the Kree bots to all that, they felt the same. They just put new skins and still gave them the same guns. But they, yeah, introducing the various hammer weapons and scythe weapons, spiders across the board, they did a really good job of mixing it up, giving us something different. So with all that, do you want to move into that final boss fight? Because that was kind of the culmination of all of these pieces, as both the level, the villains, and the puzzle into this final boss fight against Claw.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would say as we go into it, because it applies, was that I did also appreciate that it seemed like they upped the difficulty level just a touch. Like, I felt like all of the new enemies and the new capabilities that the enemies had actually made this DLC package, you know, the four or five stories, a little bit more challenging to get through than what I thought for Hawkeye and Kate Bishop.
See, I attributed that to my low power. Like, I couldn't tell if it was harder or I just didn't have a character that was leveled up as much as I was used to.
I mean, it could be to some extent, but I was just thinking more like we've been playing this game for 9 to 12 months, you know, a lot of the same enemy types. You get very used to how they're going to hurt you, what you need to do. Whereas these, the spiders, you know, having like the web strands that could grab you and pull you in, and there was just new mechanics to deal with. And I thought that just adding all of that up, you know, it kind of created a little bit more difficulty, like the unfamiliarity of it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That is a very good point to it all. So in this final boss fight, you take on Claw. You take on the comic book version of Claw, which, if you're unfamiliar, is not the Andy Serkis version. It is a full on. He becomes pure sonic energy,
right?
And I'm gonna talk a little bit of spoiler here, but if you're unfamiliar with the traditional backstory of Claw, he's always trying to get vibranium, and he falls into the vibranium mountain and comes out of it as pure sonic energy. And I've seen this play out now in three different mediums.
Oof.
And it's the same basic story, and then the same basic look at the end, where he's just a gigantic, like he's a giant that's just kind of like purple energy.
Yeah, sound waves is what they said.
Sound waves. Yeah. And it was like, man, like they couldn't even have mixed this up. So we're gonna, you know, knock it a little bit for going back to that vanilla Claw story.
It looked fantastic on the new hardware. Like, visually, the graphics on him and the tiny little details of color like running through his body, that was spot on, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I was only disappointed in the fact that it was just another version of Plain Jane,
right,
Claw. But yeah, visually, it looked awesome. That boss fight was insane because you're on the edge of a platform. You're not only fighting Claw, but Crossbones is there as well. And there's multiple turrets that are blasting down on the city of Wakanda because you had to pull back the shield on the city to draw the energy to be able to fight Claw. There were so many moving parts to that fight. Like, it honestly took me six, seven, maybe eight attempts to get through the whole thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough mission, especially because it's a long mission. Like, you have to move through a good chunk of level before you even get there. And there's a number of puzzles, and I know that there's platforms in the mines, you know, they can kill you in one instant. And so it took, you know, a few attempts to really figure that out. So by the time you go through all of that, you get to the end fight. It's a double boss mission with mechanics that you've got to deal with. And I mean, it was a little bit of frustration. And I'll say, like, I have not beat it yet. I told you over text that I thought that I might need a second player, just because every time I kept getting to the edge, I was getting real close, but just didn't feel like I had the oomph to get over the finish line there with him. And which I just kept dying, you know. So I haven't finished that part of it out yet. But the boss fight, to the points that we were making earlier, I thought was another evolution. And even though, yes, the claw aspect was a little vanilla, the boss fight itself compared to other ones in this game was almost anything but.
Yeah.
Because of that, you're fighting two enemies at the same time. Both of them had very unique mechanics, thinking about how Claw would put you into that little bubble.
Yep.
And you'd have to go one-on-one with him. But also, to damage the turrets, you had to attack Crossbones and get him to drop the turret shield. So, I mean, you really had to, like, balance two full boss fights. And so I really liked that aspect. I would love to see a lot more of that in this game's future.
And I don't know if you noticed, there was also a timer on the turrets as they were attacking the city. So the city has its own health bar.
Yes.
So you really are bouncing from attacking Claw to attacking Crossbones to then drop the shields on the turrets so you can blow up the turrets, because the city's going to, you know, if you don't defeat all of it in a time frame, then the city destroys and you can lose that way. A lot of moving parts. I could definitely see where a second person would be very, very helpful. In the end, when I ended up beating it, it was because I paused, upgraded all of my gear, and then really went in with a game plan of, like, this is how I'm going to focus. I'm going to save my L1, R1 abilities for when I'm in that bubble with Claw, use them against him, break out, attack Crossbones as much as I can, take out a turret. Beating a turret gives you a little bit of bonus, intrinsic bonus, to then put back into your L1, R1s. So it was a whole thing that came down to, even after I game planned, it was another two or three times before I actually succeeded in winning.
Yeah, and I like that challenge. You know, it's definitely what you want to see, but there was some frustration there because of the how far, you know, you kind of had to go back if you died, and coming back through, you had to restart everything completely. But all in all, I think that it was definitely a good, you know, step forward. It was good to see new mechanics. Like, as a DLC package, all in all, I think that it was really well done, probably the best that they've done so far. You know, there was also a host of quality of life improvements in there that, you know, maybe we won't break down here, but they redid the menus and a lot of that, which I think for the most part worked. I don't know if you have any thoughts there, but all in all, it seemed positive.
No, I really enjoyed the new menu look. It's a one-stop shop for everything. You no longer have to tab the here, tab there. It's a one-stop shop for your gear, for your loadout, for your skills, the whole gamut. So that was really well done. It's going to take me a little bit to figure out the new button pattern.
Yeah.
It's for, you know, batch deleting or batch dismantling gear and where things are. But once I get there, I'll be fine. But so that was a little disruptive. But in the end, it is a much preferable menu layout, like UI, than what we had before.
Yeah, those are definitely things that are small but helpful. And so I was happy with that. You know, I think really the best way to sum it up is, you know, still I want more out of the game. But I'm really happy to see, especially in today's age where it doesn't always happen, Crystal Dynamics and Square didn't just run away from the challenges early on. You know, they came back, they continued to stay committed, and the game is getting better. I think the challenge that we'll see, and, you know, I know we're going to talk here about kind of what's coming next before we move on, but I did see this article from Forbes yesterday, and I think this is really where the money's going to be as far as how long they continue to dev this game. Because per Forbes, from the Steam accounts, they where they track concurrent players, they said at its all-time lowest period earlier this month, Avengers was maxing out at only about 700 to 800 concurrent players a day.
Oof.
And if you're not familiar, that's practically zero in the world of tech and gaming and services. Then it had a free-to-play weekend just a little bit ago to kind of get the excitement coming.
Mm-hmm.
They said they got up to about 10,000 a day for a little while there, which is good. That's better, obviously. But then it's dropped right back down, and they're saying that so far for the War for Wakanda, on launch day, they had the highest was 4,800 players, and since they're peaking around 3,600 to 4,000, which I will reiterate is still pretty much zero in terms of these types of services and games. When you think about, you know, Destiny still hitting over 50,000 a day, as old as it is, and, you know, Fortnite is in the millions.
Yeah.
So
well, hopefully they can get it back on track. They do still have future plans and more DLC and more characters to come. They've said that Spider-Man will be coming in 2021. Like, that has been announced. So hopefully we see Spider-Man. I don't think it's going to be the Insomniac version of Spider-Man in this game, but you can kind of see some groundwork between Black Panther and Black Widow on how Spider-Man might work.
Right.
And it could be a great addition. One thing I wanted to point out as well is there's been a few people that did some data mining or people that found glitches. And two possibilities are Wanda and Loki.
Oh, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, people found information for both of these characters. The one that stuck out the most was a Twitter user who is literally called @PlayAvenger. And they were Thor, and they walked into in Wakanda within the palace. You can go see, like, the shaman.
Yeah.
And it was a glitch. When you walked into that room as Thor, he addresses you as Wanda. It's like a broken voice line.
Oh, interesting. I had not seen
that. Yeah. So that is there. And then the data mining, they found something there for Loki.
References
to Loki. Now, of course, that could be villain Loki. That could be playable character Loki. You never know. But either way, if you're telling me Spider-Man before 2021 is over, and then you queue up Wanda and Loki with the hype that they've been getting from the television shows, maybe this game sticks on for a little while longer.
Yeah, it's going to come down to when they draw the line in the sand, because the Spider-Man aspect is contractual. Like, they are in contract with Sony to make Spider-Man for this game. I don't think they have that for Xbox, you know, or any other platform, essentially.
Right.
So there was some talks in some of the articles that I had read that, yes, Spider-Man's coming in 2021, but will that essentially be the point in which Crystal Dynamics kind of cuts bait if the numbers of daily users is still so low? So we'll really have to see if they go beyond that, I think. Mm. Much more to come.
Much more to come. Hopefully, I just want to see it keep plugging away at it. That's all I want here.
So Crystal Dynamics' take on the Avengers continues to improve, albeit slowly, but keeping its focus on character-driven storylines and impressive combat that puts players in the driver's seat of Earth's mightiest heroes is worth coming back each time for a little more. We hope to see this trend continue as they release additional content so we have a reason to party up and crush more aimbots, but be sure to find us on social and share your thoughts about the improvements this game has seen and the War for Wakanda DLC. Kyle and I are going to shift gears in a moment to preview another Marvel game that is set to release on October 26th. But before we do, let's take a moment to look back on our top five Marvel games from the past, not headlined by Spider-Man or the X-Men. Top five Marvel video games not titled Spider-Man or X-Men. Five.
Marvel Nemesis Rise of the Imperfects. Yes, we're starting with a controversial one. Published by EA and released in 2005 for the PlayStation 2, Xbox, and GameCube, This open arena-styled fighting game featured well-known Marvel heroes taking on a new batch of villains known as the Imperfects. Imperfect might actually be the best word to describe this game, though, because there are a number of flaws. However, kudos to the developer Instigate for trying something different and to Marvel for taking a risk on brand new characters.
4.
LEGO Marvel Super Heroes. Who doesn't love a good LEGO game? Developer Traveler's Tales have hit the mark every time, and LEGO Marvel Super Heroes was no different. With 180 playable characters, this action-adventure slash puzzler is a joy to play. And it's hard not to smile as you fly, ride, or run around the LEGO environment while it tells you its own original story through linear missions with open-world gameplay in between. This game released in 2013, but has spawned many sequels, keeping generations of LEGO Marvel fans gaming.
3.
Captain America and the Avengers. Every single person of a given age has a memory of playing this game. You may not have known its name at the time, but you definitely know the game and its roster. Cap, Hawkeye, Iron Man, and White Vision. Developed and published by Data East for arcades in 1991, then re-released on the Sega Genesis, Super Nintendo, and Game Boy in subsequent years, this side-scrolling beat-em-up is pure arcade fun, battling alongside your friends whether you are playing the 2 or 4-player cabinet.
2.
Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2. Speaking of playing with friends, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 is the couch co-op game for the ages. This follow-up to the original Ultimate Alliance came out in 2009. Developed by Vicarious Visions as an action RPG that followed the story events of Civil War and allowed players to form interchangeable teams of 4 from a massive list of Marvel characters. Each character has their own set of power-ups, which could be combined with other team members' moves to create fusions. These fusions became so iconic, we eventually saw some of them play out in the MCU.
1.
Marvel vs. Capcom 2. On a list like this one, everyone is playing for runner-up, because number one is a surefire lock. Very few will argue this pick, because Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is the Marvel fighting game. Originally released in arcades in the year 2000, this tag team 2D fighter was actually the fourth game in the Marvel vs. Capcom series. Of the 56 playable characters, 28 of them are Marvel heroes or villains. From Captain America and Doctor Doom to Thanos, the roster is stacked. Even War Machine made the cut. MVC2 has been ported 6 times in its 21-year history and is easily a contender for greatest fighting game of all time. Now Capcom, do the right thing, port this bad boy for a 7th time, and take us all for a ride.
With history dating back to 1986, there is a deep catalog of Marvel video games out there, but those were definitely some good ones. I think LEGO Marvel Super Hero was one of the first LEGO games that I truly like played beginning to end. That had a huge roster. Captain America and the Avengers, fantastic retro game in the arcades, no doubt, but you are right. MVC2, definitely up there, if not truly number one. Would love to hear what folks have to think about those, because I'm sure there's some opinions out there that would come back on us there. But
oh yeah,
even with that catalog, we're always looking to the future. There's always new games on the horizon, including 2 brand new Marvel games just around the corner. One, Marvel Future Revolution on mobile, and then the other, the Guardians of Galaxy game that is coming out on PS5 and Xbox in October. That is going to be where we are going to focus for the last part of our chapter here today. But Kyle, you did have a few thoughts on Marvel Future Revolution.
Yeah, being a mobile game, it's not something I would typically partake in, but it looked cool. It kind of had a Marvel Ultimate Alliance open world action RPG style. The story is cross-dimensional, so there's multiverse action. There's characters with different skins and different attitudes. It looked really cool. It actually releases next Tuesday on August 25th, or that might be a Wednesday, but either way, August 25th is its release day. Eager to see what it does. Marvel has a long history of solid mobile games, so this could just be another one to that list, or maybe it'll change me and get me gaming.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I'm kind of like you. I'm very picky about mobile gaming, and I do very little of it compared to console or PC, anything like that. And so when I saw this, it looks awesome. I'm with you there, like just looking through the homepage and what they're promoting. Mobile's probably going to keep it off my list, but I was, you know, my one takeaway was I kind of would like a more serious open world RPG like this on console, since Ultimate Alliance is a little bit more arcadey, a little bit more cartoonish. Like the design of this, the one thing that stood out to me was it looked like their character design was a little more serious, a little bit more grown up in a way, I guess, you know, just not quite as Nintendo-ish as Ultimate Alliance was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Nintendo-ish is a good way to put it. That's 100% what that, you know, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, The Black Order, ended up being, was very Nintendo. But you're right, this one's grown up, different skins, different approaches, different attacks. All of that looks great. It comes down to the mechanics and how do you maneuver like that on your phone without having like an iPad of a phone.
Yeah, or peripheral attachment that turns it into a controller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thinking of that, that would be fantastic for what I've seen out of Marvel Future Revolution. But me on my iPhone 8, like my thumbs are just too big. My thumbs are just too big. But
grown man thumbs. Can't grown man thumbs. Mobile.
Right.
But really, I think what we're more excited about, probably the majority of people out there are more excited about, was this Guardians of the Galaxy game that kind of got announced out of nowhere. I mean, I remember just earlier this year, they dropped it on everybody. And I mean, I wasn't aware of it. I don't know if I know anybody that truly had the inside, you know, track on this one or had seen announcements from before. But it does come out, if everything holds true, on October 26th of this year. It'll be PS5. It'll be Xbox Series X. And the difference is, because I've heard some folks talking about how it looks a lot like Marvel's Avengers, the difference is it's going to be a story-driven single-player game where you take the role of Star-Lord leading the Guardians through these crazy adventures, whereas, of course, you know, Marvel's Avengers was built to be four-player co-op.
Yeah, for sure. To touch on when it's released, I saw this thing that said it was first leaked in January of 2017, and I'm like, I have no recollection of that happening.
I mean, if so, it was one of those like offhand job postings. Somebody's like, oh, you know, I saw they're asking for a coder that likes Guardians. They're going to make a Guardians game, you know, like that kind of stuff that always comes out.
There's no way that game full on leaked 4 years ago and we didn't know about it. So, yeah, the first time I had heard about it, you know, same as everyone else, E3 in 2021. But it looks interesting. I go back and forth because I think when I first saw the trailer, I was like, you know, I like Guardians. I don't love Guardians. I might skip this one. And then when I saw a few follow-up trailers and really hearing that it is a single-player, story-driven campaign, there's going to be dialogue choices throughout the whole thing, and those dialogue choices will impact your relationships with your fellow Guardians and how they interact with you, which then in turn benefit the various power-ups that they can give you later. I was like, okay, check, check, check. All of this is sounding a lot better. So like the initial gameplay, I was like, maybe I'll skip it. But now I'm like, okay, my pre-order.
Yeah, that's how I felt, was because that first trailer, it was Guardians, and it wasn't bad, but even the visuals looked a little last gen, and so it just, and between not hearing anything about it, I was like, oh man, is this like a rushed game? It's also kind of parent companied by Square, even though it's not Crystal Dynamics that's building it, it's Eidos Montreal, so, but you still have that tie to Square, so it's like, oh, are they just trying to like rush out a different Marvel game because Avengers kind of flopped? You know, so it was kind of giving me some vibes like that. But when they came out with some of the gameplay videos that are out there on YouTube and you get those, you know, first 10 minutes and they started showing, yes, like you get to make choices in the middle of these moments of banter between the group and interject what you want to do and changes how the missions go, I guess, or how the outcomes are. That definitely made it more appealing.
Yeah, that reminded me of like Final Fantasy 15. Almost,
yeah.
Where you only ever controlled Noctis, but your choices and kind of how you leveled people up and the different abilities that you gave them, you could control and command your three other teammates.
It's a good comparison, yeah.
So I was like, ah, you know what? And I did enjoy Final Fantasy 15. It was a while ago, but I did enjoy it. So I'm like, this game could be better than I'm giving it, because you're right. Like, the original, it's always weird. And Marvel's going to fall into this trap with their video games, especially with the MCU being as big as it is. The look of it, you're like, man, they're going to fall into the same trap as Marvel's Avengers did when it first released, that you've got Star-Lord, you've got Peter Quill, but it doesn't look anything like Chris Pratt.
Right.
And the voice actor sounds nothing like Chris Pratt. And from the other stuff I've seen, Drax is nothing like Dave Bautista's Drax.
Right, right. Yeah, that pissed off some people when Avengers launched, so it definitely could come back around here.
But everything they've put out since has been very positive, and it's an October 26 game. I'm not sure what else is queued up to come out in late October, early November. I know that's right before that Black Friday type stuff, so maybe if it hits a small deal, you know, if I don't, I think at this point, what I'm looking at it, I'm not going to pre-order it, but I think I will eventually get it.
Yeah.
And if it went on sale during that Black Friday, I'd give it a try. Unless I see something else that pushes me to it.
Right, exactly. I was going to say, we still have to see exactly what all comes out this year. I can think of FIFA 22 and Battlefield 2042 in that October window. There's probably a few others out there, but nothing else that's like really standing out to me. And I know, you know, Battlefield, that's not on your radar. I'm torn if that's going to be something I'm going to get back into or not. But so for me, it might be one of those things where, like, just lack of anything else, you know, as long as the reviews aren't horrible, then yeah, I'll pick it up and play it. The combat looks pretty good, and Star-Lord with his guns and everything, I think, is going to work really well. But I do want to see how they differentiated from what we've seen with the combat in Avengers, because you're still looking at this team of four people and some combo moves and things like that. And so I don't know how awesome it's going to be if it really plays a lot like that, but I can't have my friends as Drax or Rocket.
Yeah. You know, or you
so
can't.
So I think
switch.
That'll be a question, or you can't switch. Exactly. But if they give us, you know, some ability to kind of direct, like some of those games do, you know, where you're controlling a team as a single player and you can hit up on the D-pad and have them do something or whatever, I think that could make up for some of that.
No, I agree. The ability to not play as Drax or Groot or Rocket, Gamora, etc., that is a bit of a bummer, because you're like, man, why would you put it out like that? So I think in the end, it's actually going to come down to the story.
Right, yeah.
And those dialogue moments, I think that's actually what's going to make or break the game for me, in that, because the gameplay, you know, the gameplay is going to be the gameplay, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, how much of an impact does that have? And is it more than just, you know, who gets leveled up faster? And so when it's all said and done and everybody's leveled up, it didn't really matter. Or is it going to directly impact the gameplay to the point where I can play this game once or twice and get a different experience? Like, that would be super cool. That would hook me instantly. If you could tell me, maybe the game in itself is only 20 hours, but it's going to go on a Detroit Becoming Human or Until Dawn situation where the entire story is going to play out differently because of those decisions, then that would be cool.
Yeah, I think that will definitely go a long way for how well the game turns out because of that. You're spot on there. It's going to come down to how impactful those dialogue decisions are and everything like that. You know, how much they really make you feel like you matter as Star-Lord.
Yeah.
The other two thoughts I had here, really more abstractly, is A, they better have invested in the rights to a lot of the great 80s songs, because if this isn't set to an entirely amazing 80s soundtrack as you play, like not just in the opening credits, but like as you play, I need to be able to turn that tape deck on as Peter Quill and be jamming out to, you know, whatever awesome 80s arena song that's out there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I saw, and I'm sure you saw the same thing, you can call like team huddles in the middle of a battle.
Yeah.
And then you give an inspirational speech and play a song. Those are the moments that I'm thinking of. They need to have a great 80s soundtrack.
Exactly.
So the song starts playing in the huddle. And then I'm thinking of the opening scene of Guardians 2.
Yes.
Like, Yeah, like you want those moments. Like if that's the whole game, yeah, like sign me up. That'll be fun.
Exactly. That is what I'm talking about. I need that vibe. And, you know, James Gunn and them, they kind of just ruined that because, like, it's just synonymous, you know, Guardians movies and that soundtrack. So, like, it needs to be carried over, I think, here in the game. And then the last thing I had from my side, that other thought I had, was that I do hope that the game is successful. Because I kind of hope that this will launch a little bit more of an uptick in superhero-driven games that we get. And so it's not that they aren't out there. You know, we get the Batman games, the Arkham games, we get the Spider-Man games. So, you know, there is a market for these games, but it's just not very diverse. You know,
Yeah. We've
gotten a bunch of those games, but you don't get a Superman game, you don't get an Iron Man game, you don't get a Captain America game, you know. I'm hoping that this being a solo story-driven game, that we actually maybe see a little bit more development of, you know, let me go be Tony Stark and play just a dedicated Iron Man game, or name anybody, you know, like any character.
Yeah.
Give me villains. I'll go play as Doctor Doom. You know what I mean? Like, whatever it may be. But I'm kind of hoping it kind of just kickstarts that a little bit, because as popular as the movies have been and just comic book content in general.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't seem to have fully, you know, translated or taken over the gaming world like it has TV and movies.
No, not in a way that you'd want it to. And I think there are a string of games that came out in the mid-2000s to, you know, 2010s, but they're all based on the movies.
Right.
And historically, video games based on movies are not good. And I think just about every Marvel game falls into that category. So really seeing an original story,
yes.
I think I'm all on board for that as well. Should be interested to see, you know, I know you mentioned the Arkham games, what that Suicide Squad game ends up looking like.
Yeah, that's another one that's out there that I think could hit it. But like I just want more of that, like quality story driven games that focus on the heroes, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, like gives you something, because you're right, the market is there and they've proven to be popular. And if the past 5 years has proven anything when it comes to superheroes, that you don't have to tell the same old superhero tale.
Exactly.
You can put a little personality into it, you can make it a deep character, and it really works well. Like Spider-Man and Miles is a fantastic example of that, but just about every piece of television content and some of the movies we've gotten as well also show that. So video games is an up-and-coming medium. I mean, it's already arrived, so maybe I shouldn't say up-and-coming, but people are starting to realize you can tell full-blown stories through that medium.
Yeah, I think more acceptance, you know, general public, more casual fans, more casual gamers, you know, I think it would help tie them in and bring them into that world of gaming a little bit more.
For sure, for sure. We're eager to see what this single-player Guardians ends up looking like. Hit us up on social to let us know what Marvel games you are most excited about playing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion, go ahead and smash the subscribe button so you never miss a chapter of Geek Ketchup, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to follow GK on social media. You can find links to all of our accounts on the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even links to our merch store and Patreon if you'd like to support the show. But as always, remember to stay saucy, you nerds.